And we'll start with introductions, if you would. Just say your name and maybe a few words about your painting practice. We'll do it that way. Jan.
Okay. My name is Jan Dickey. I use a lot of earth-based materials. I'm interested in pre-industrial painting mediums like milk and eggs and animal glues. I'm interested in how paint deteriorates and how it peels and discolors and things like that.
Hi, my name is Andrew Yamauchi. I am a figurative narrative painter. I paint like mainly representationally, but I try to mix in some abstract passages into like the composition, and my works are about just living here in Hawaii.
My name's Kaneo Grespi, and mostly my work is entails taking like what I've kind of amassed in my representational skill and going back into it and degrading it with like child scribbles and scrawls and making stuff out of that.
Hi, my name's Alina Kawai. So my paintings, I like to start with pen and then build it with acrylic and oil, so mixed media. And generally, I try to strive for like a story. And then through that, I try to incorporate like time, so past, present, and future moments of like individual experiences and I guess like a community as a whole too.
Mm-hmm. Oh, thank you so much. Have you all had a chance to see the Abstract Expressionist show at the Indiana Museum so far? Mm-hmm. You know, I thought we could start kind of with that as a springboard, just in terms of it being an opportunity to see a lot of artists that you kind of go through art school hearing about. I thought I'd start by asking what your overall impression is and what was it like to see some of those, you know, those famous painters, Pollock, you know, Klein and so on.
Well, for me, it was the first time I saw a bunch of those painters, and I definitely kind of got what, like, the hype was about, of the, like, seeing their work in person, and, like, with that big Willem de Kooning painting, like, the way that his, like, brushstrokes are, you can kind of, like, feel and, like, imagine him standing right there making the work right in front of you.
Yeah, it was nice to see works because you would see that in the mainland and not so often here. And it's like Philip Guston's painting. I remember Guston, yeah. Mm-hmm. I saw his and then I realized it's like older works, more of not what he's so known for with the figures. And then even like Pollock's work too, it was kind of like an older style that I saw. So that was good.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's interesting the aura that paintings have that was made by people that you have heard about and that you have sort of a narrative into their personal history or maybe have seen movies about them depicting them painting. I teach an intro to visual art class at HCC right now, and I showed them my students the Jackson Pollock movie and then had them go to the exhibit. And I think they were really like drawn and attracted to the Jackson Pollock painting because they had sort of this reference to of having seen the movie and seen this actor play Jackson Pollock. And so I think the persona that's created through art history narratives and then as it like plays out in the media adds to or kind of creates more of an experience when you see these physical objects rather as opposed to the artist who I was less familiar with. You know, some of the other artists that they brought into the show that were maybe had grown up in Hawaii or from other countries outside of the United States that were involved in that abstract expressionist movement.
Hmm. Do you think people are more, you know, are more attracted by the personal story or by what he was trying to do and the whole psychological, you know, story behind that?
I think like all those things are sort of wrapped up in each other. You know,
bad boys, yeah. The everything.
Yeah, but it's hard to parse it out. You know, between what we're experiencing through actually the paint. You know, and our experience of the paint and the color and the forms that they're making, and then what we've sort of ingested in more this like didactic way, I guess, of like reading about things and, you know, having things communicated, things to us through storytelling.
Mm-hmm. They could put the two together when they looked at a painting of his. But Andrew, your work, I could see you really looking at some of the gestural stuff and maybe being motivated by it. How did it grab you?
I thought mm-hmm. the show was like really cool. You know, like Jan was saying, there's like a kind of like an aura around it. But just seeing it like in person, it's like different than seeing it like in a book. You know, you can see like the strokes, you can see like the texture. For me, it was, you know, it's almost like having a conversation with like that artist. You know, like each stroke is like a word, and you know, like the whole thing is like a conversation you're having. And just seeing like, you know, you can like some more than others, but like the cooning and I would say like Gustin, you can like see their process and you can kind of see how they built the painting. So that definitely kind of like informed me, like, you know, how I can like apply it to my own work.
Mm-hmm. When I went back the second time, you know what I really loved was the that Ad Reinhardt, mm-hmm. actually, that had that wall of Ad Reinhardt. Oh, you know, I thought, why did I like that so much? And why did I not even see it the first night?
I think that was my favorite.
Yeah, those are definitely my favorite as well.
Really? Why?
For me, it's the time that you have to spend with them and the change that goes on as your eyes are adjusting to the paint. And so art that like demands a little bit more time out of you, I think is valuable. And then I think the sequence of, because it was multiple screen prints, I think they were, the sequence of looking at one after the other and having your eyes be unadjusted and then have to adjust to them to be able to see the really close blacks, they're like maybe a blue black or a red black, but when you first see them, it's just black, you know. And so that moment of like perceptual adjustment, I think is there's something in that space that opens up sort of a space where I think it's powerful.
That's a space that's often not even given to a painting, right? If it doesn't grab you at first. Mm-hmm. I hope people will go back and see those prints because they're kind of geometric, I guess you would say, and the colors involved are, as Jan said, just in the least way different from each other in the piece. It's one of those things where you really notice the effect of a reflective glass over mm-hmm. the thing. I mean, it's amazing the level of concentration looking at them requires.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting that you brought that up because I timed it weird, and when I got there, I only had 15 minutes to look at the whole show, so I kind of ran through it. And those pieces, I glanced at them, like, they look all the same, so I just looked at it really quick. But when Jan explained, like, the subtleties of it, I'm thinking, oh, I definitely have to, like, go back and look at it.
I didn't even see them the first time I was there.
Yeah, because it just looked like because I was in a rush, too, and that doesn't help when you're trying to look at artworks. And there's a lot that needed attention for each piece. Mm-hmm. And for that, you have to look at it, I guess, as a whole. Or I saw it as a whole because I looked at it quickly. And the shapes and the colors were so similar that I just kind of brushed right across it real quick.
What was your reaction to the de Kooning? Because that one screams at you, right?
Yeah, I guess I wouldn't say it's typical, but maybe expected, like something people would see. And of course it has like a strong force to it when you see it in person. And I guess a lot of people might, like I said, expect that from him just because he has such a big name to it. But it's very almost messy, kind of dirty looking in a good way, though.
Yeah.
You know?
What do you guys think about this? When I saw that, I thought, yep, I hate you. I knew that. I can't stand you. You know? And Do you think that's a reaction to the way it's painted or the imagery in it? I mean, we're talking about Willem de Kooning, who does these breasts all over and big mouths open with teeth and tongue and so on. And, you know, highly gestural, really visceral colors and stuff like that. What is this guy doing?
Well, I think, like, his reputation of, like, being a womanizer and all that kind of comes through with the paintings, but it's also, like, if you take that out of it, you can kind of get into it. And, like, it's funny what you were saying about how they look all dirty and, like, kind of ugly. And, like, some of, like, when you look up close, like, there's, like, grays in there that, like, shouldn't be allowed to use in any painting. But, like, for some reason, what else he does in the painting gets it to work. And so I think it's interesting to kind of go into it and work out what is what the painting's actually doing and telling you and stuff.
Huh. So would you call this work abstraction or what?
Well, it's abstracted reality. So, like, it's not like a representation of a woman, but it's using that form to make something else. And I think it was more abstract than some of the other works in the show. Like, there were some where, like, you could kind of see it pointing to something else. But that, it took that form and turned it into, like, a different thing.
How do you feel that you know, your work, for example, Kainoa, there are passages that are like sections in the de Kooning, but you put it in another context.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess with my work, I'm just trying to kind of take, like, conventions of paintings and, like, turn them around or, like, make fun of them or, like, make little jokes here and there. And so by, like, taking what is, like, out there in reality and, like, mashing it up, I, like, try to take something out of it and make something new.
Yeah. Do you think people get that?
I don't know. You guys tell me.
Well, I guess I'll speak to the difference. And, like, in my, from my perspective, kind of what Kainoa is doing with maybe your portrait of a female model versus de Kooning, where de Kooning, it's like, it's very serious. You know, I think he regards the a woman as a model in the same way that women as models for male painters have been used over the centuries, especially, you know, in the European art tradition. And that comes from a position of misogyny and this kind of patriarchal regard for women as beautiful objects to be looked at. And I mean, with de Kooning's depiction, he then takes it to this a weird other level where there's sort of a violence in the way that he uses paint and the way that he distorts the woman's facial features and body parts. And so it's hard to I can definitely appreciate de Kooning's use of the material of oil paint. I think he was really good at that. But when you really start to, I don't know, I guess as an abstract expression, I think the expression expresses a pretty, like, violent and attitude towards the subject, which is a woman. And to connect that to the history of the way that male painters have painted women in the past, which is usually in this from this very kind of subjugating way of looking at them and painting at them. I think it falls, like, pretty neatly in line with that tradition, and then kind of takes it towards it kind of twists it into this even more, you know, sort of violent, that adds more violence to it. And it could be that's an interesting critique, actually, on that whole history. I don't see
it's Harvey Weinstein in paint.
Yeah, so I don't see that as being a critique, just knowing what I know about, you know, de Kooning. Whereas
he's able to do this thing, and he really conveys it strongly, whatever it is he's saying.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. So I mean, detached from his intent, you know, maybe it does open up, you know, something for us to look at and think about the history of, you know, the portraiture of women in the past that is important and useful. I mean, I think the way that Kainoa is doing his portraits, there's There's some things like so kind of comical and mischievous about it that I think it's more upfront and in his position as critiquing that history in art. Whereas with de Kooning, it's sort of – I don't know whether de Kooning as an individual is really critiquing it, even if you look at it from a critical perspective.
Well, I think in a way he was actually kind of critiquing like his own movement that he belonged to. I mean, he's doing the figure at a time when – it really wasn't in vogue, at least within, the zeitgeist of, like, the abstract expressionist era, But, he's kind of using his position within that movement, like, his prominence, he's going to say, like, oh, I don't really care. I'm just going to, like, paint the figure regardless. And, in a sense, like, I think that's, like, kind of, like, a mischievous act on its own. So, I don't know. It's an interesting thing, I know, like, a lot of artists, they want to do, like, the opposite of, like, what's
well, how do you paint like a woman manifesto after anger and everybody else, right? How do you paint a woman?
Yeah, exactly, because, you want to, like, kind of do your own thing. Yeah, and, yeah, so.
Well, you are one of the people currently in Hawaii who is trying to paint women and other people.
Oh.
What do you mean when you throw in some, abstract marks in there? What are you trying to say? What are you doing?
Well, I mean, I think in a sense, it's like a little bit more intuitive. Maybe, he is a very thoughtful painter, de Kooning, but I think a lot of it is just like intuitive, so I don't think it was something he could like really resist. It's just like he had like put those like really juicy strokes in, like the real, there's some materiality of the oil paint, like. He couldn't resist it. Like, it had to be there. So, I think, a lot of it's just like, it'd be real cool if I could just go, like, on the canvas.
I know. I know.
But,
there's just something, raw and refreshing about seeing those brush strokes, though, isn't there?
Yeah, definitely.
I guess what I'm thinking about now is the how of painting. How you make a mark. That makes a difference, or does it?
Yes, definitely. Because there's marks that are, you're not thinking about it, but it comes out with thought. And then there's ones that you think about too much and doesn't. And you look at it after, and then you realize, oh, that doesn't look good. So there's thinking to it and not thinking to it in a weird way.
Since you work with a sort of, you work it up from a drawing.
Mm-hmm.
So you start with a drawing, which is, pencil pretty, a little tight, and then do you work towards something more gestural, or?
I do half and half. I think certain things I get really tight, and that's why I start with either a pen or pencil, and then in hopes that I do layers, it's kind of this fun thing. Like, I don't know what will be kept and what will get lost. And I guess when I put strokes over it, I might not like it at that moment, but as a whole, it would work better, if that makes sense. So it's that process of layering that adds up to it, to like the final piece. Mm-hmm.
And what do you base decisions on? I mean, as far as this works, this doesn't.
Oh, that's hard.
I know, that's a terrible question.
That's hard. I would start with a sketch, but I never finish with what I start with. It's always completely different. So
that's your way of breaking through the white.
For me, yeah.
Okay.
I have to start with something. But decision making, for me, it's a lot of movement with my body or my hands, too. So based off of, I guess, what's happening throughout the whole piece and what area I'm focusing on, that's how I would proceed to add something or take away something or leave it and not touch it anymore.
With your bag of tricks, all the different things you know how to make a mark.
That I think I know how. So.
How do you start a painting, Kainoa?
Well, a lot of times I'm just sitting there with like a white painting and I have no ideas, so I just go ahead and do something and then like look at what I just did and figure out where to go from there. And there's this painting documentary, Painter's Painting. It follows like all the abstract expressionists through like the 50s through the 70s and stuff. And Barnett Newman, he had a little print in the abstract show. But he said in that movie like when he first started doing those zip paintings, he did one and then he like he had it for like a month and he had no idea what he had done and he had to like figure out what it was that was. And so I guess when I do something, a lot of times I don't know what it is and I have to go back into it and figure it out. So,
well, what would be the first thing you would do? I mean, it'd be...
Well, sometimes I would just make like an abstract mark and look at it for a little while and think about it. And then other times I would like start from a picture and put some picture down that has not really much context to anything. Just like a found picture out of like a National Geographic or something, and then go into that and manipulate it in different ways.
I'm trying to imagine your process, Jen. I mean, people need to kind of get an idea of what your things look like.
Yeah.
Natural process. It's process versus depiction of any kind.
The process does have a lot to do with it. I mean, they look like abstract paintings. The stuff that I've been doing more recently in the past year or so has been primarily monochrome and white. I don't know. The work that I was making, the last body of work that I made, started out actually from I had some house plants in my studio, and I was using canvases as trays for the plants, and I would water the plants, and they would keep the water from going onto the floor. And at this time, I wasn't painting. I'd like moved on. I was doing some other kinds of projects. Eventually the soil from the plant started to sustain the fibers of the canvas and make these discolored rings in the fibers of that canvas substrate. And I put that up on the wall, and I just got interested in that as the beginning of an image, and started then after that adding paint onto it. And a lot of it's just sort of an experiment with how the paint is going to dry and crack. And so I use milk paint because it dries to a very brittle form, and so it cracks very easy. So sometimes I'll pour it into a puddle and let that dry and see how that cracks, and then maybe pour a different consistency of milk paint or add egg or an animal glue to the top of that and see how it layers and cracks. I'm just kind of interested in what the paint does and how it reveals layers beneath it. But it always starts now and always starts up from the substrate. It used to be canvas. More recently, I've been ripping up paper, gluing it together, and making these more amorphous substrates that I'm then layering paint on top of. But I think about the thing that the paint goes on first, and then it sort of works its way up to there through layers.
What makes you like something?
It's not very easy to articulate that into words. I think it's more of an affective or like a feeling response a lot of times. I'm sure there's probably if I underwent psychoanalysis or something, get to the bottom of why everything has an effect on me.
All right, and why Elena makes something look a certain way.
But I think a lot of my aesthetic interest is in things that are entropying, and so I'm really interested in. I live in an old house in Manoa where the paint's kind of cracked and peeling, and it's not all the same consistent color of white. I'm really interested in that because there's something kind of active and living about a surface that is not perfectly laminated. You know, that there's a kinetic energy that's at work in that that's pulling it apart. And so I think when paintings work for me, or when I feel like I'm finished with something, is they resonate on the same level as things in real life like that, like the entropy of a painted wall or a rusting out car.
What's your process, Andrew?
I guess it's probably like, the closest. My process is probably to like to Elena, where I start with like a drawing, and
start off with an image? Do you start with a photograph or an image in your mind or some place?
Yeah, just like a. I don't know. I guess I've always been that way. There's like a pretty strong like image in my head, so you know, it's like I gotta paint it, I guess, or
those people I've seen. I mean, yeah, images. It's occasions or places that I've seen your pictures of.
I like watch like a lot of TV and like YouTube, so it's like, you know, there's like images are like kind of bouncing around. So it's just like that'd be kind of cool for like a painting, but.
To do that in Kaimuki or something like that is how you'd stage it.
Yeah, yeah. Or, you know, just like, you know, what you see in, like, or what I see in my everyday life. You know, maybe sometimes I want to, like, translate into like, a painting. But, you know, I started with, like, a charcoal drawing and usually charcoal. And, you know, like, I guess, like, what I'm like, kind of learning, you know, it's... You know, you're always like a student, right, with like painting. What I'm learning to like try and do more and more is just to, I guess, like just sort of find like the form of the painting, like just sort of more spontaneously. You know, I try to like, I mean, it sounds kind of like, you know, like artsy kind of talk, but like try and get like a real, like, I guess, sensitivity for like the surface, you know, like the, you know, like the texture of like the canvas, like the charcoal on the canvas, and then see how you can like kind of build it up, like with you know, each like layer that you paint onto it, and yeah, you know, just sort of like have like this like back and forth with like the painting, you know, just like say, you know, you like put it like on a like a you put on like a color, and then you see how it kind of like affects like the composition, and then you go back and add something else, and then, you know, it's just like this sort of like ongoing dialogue that you're having, so.
Mm-hmm. Where, oh, I want to do this, oh, you came out like that, okay, what do I do next?
I guess like the important thing that I gotta like kind of keep in mind is like, you know, it's also like in relation to like the sort of image that I have in my head, you know. I mean, you I don't want to like force like the image too much, like, you know, like I said, you like I want to like sort of like sort of like find the form of the image, but you know, at the same time, when you're like finding like these relations and all that, you know, it's also being like compared to like what this image that this like sort of image that I have in my head of, you know, how I think that like the painting should be, and yeah, I don't know, it's like a it's an ongoing struggle and a lot of headaches.
Do you think most people understand your paintings when they look at them?
Honestly, that's never really been, like, too much of a concern with me. Like, I actually like hearing, like, oh, I mean, like, at Alina, she put on a show at ARS Cafe, and then I was a part of it. You know, my brother, he came to the show, and then he was, like, kind of, like, telling me, like, you know, this, like, kind of made-up story that he had about, like, this one painting. Of mine, and you know, it was just like, oh wow, I wasn't thinking that at all, but yeah, it's kind of cool. Yeah. So, you know, it's like, you know, like a lot of artists, they talk about, you know, the viewer plays like an active role in the sort of creation of the painting, mm-hmm. the sort of interpretation, and it's, you know, it gets from the artist, like, to, like, the viewer. There's, like, this, like, sort of, like, dialogue, I guess.
I feel like artists, painters, need to have some information in their viewers. You know, people have to come with something. Otherwise, I think it's going to be hard for them to approach some of the material, like you, Kainoa. How are you going to prepare people to look at your paintings and get them?
A lot of times I, after making a work, I try to think of something like funny or clever to write as the title. And so usually like the title kind of gives, the viewer some extra like thing to hold on to while they look at the painting. And usually the titles are kind of like sarcastic or funny. And so I think that kind of helps.
As sort of an entry point
yeah.
for them. Yeah, I think so. What do you think about that, Alina? What's an entry point for your paintings? How can you give people something to make them spend that extra time that, like, we spent with the Ad Reinhardt?
I guess that's always hard to, I don't expect anybody to stare at it as long as I have. of course. I mean, it would be nice, but... And like I said, I don't expect people to stare at it for so long, but maybe it's kind of a focal point if that I usually try to strive in the painting. So something that stands out within the piece and make people think about it or question it. And that could be either, so one of the paintings that I did for that show, me and Andrew had, it was this figure in a forest sitting on a couch. So I guess a lot of people were drawn to that. And I think that has to do with the color and maybe, I think that's one thing that I try to play too, with color and contrast and the different brush marks. So making things stand, making something stand out and hoping to grab their attention to it. And also making narratives that don't make sense or that, and in painting, there's so much things that you can control that won't happen in reality. And that's the best part of it. So I try to make up things and twist things, twist the story to it. And then people would question like, oh, it looks like this. Is this Waikiki? Is this so-and-so or things like that.
What is it saying when something is made in a really gestural way or something is made in a very flat and graphic way?
I guess gestural would be flat and graphic. I think of like computer images. I just, for the first time, I used like a painting app on an iPad today. And then I was like, oh my God, it's crazy because it was so graphic and hard edge. But you can also create these brush strokes too. So I guess that would be kind of the difference, like something hard edge versus something more organic and a little less controlled. So with painting, I tend to go more organic and less controlled and not so hard edge on things.
I just wonder if... storyline kind of drama has got to be replaced without, if you don't have the physical drama of the material. Do you know what I mean? Because so many images today are digital. Yeah. And probably in the future, it's going to be a very rare thing to hold a three-dimensional anything, should people continue to make them.
Well, I think that's something that comes up a lot in discussions of contemporary painting is this loss of materiality in our everyday lives because of how much time we spend interfacing with flat screens that contain just multitudes of images. And I think it gets articulated in painting circles that painted objects are this, you know, maybe it's sort of like kind of a romantic connection to the material world that keeps like, you know, moving further and further away from our sense of touch. And I've like have found myself just over the course of my life, like really attracted to really material painting. I think when I was young and I got into Jackson Pollock paintings, it was because I saw like that he was just like using paint straight out of the tube and creating these really kind of textured, energetic, very material things. And then, I mean, next to the Ad Reinhardt, the Poussette Dart painting, which is right across from that, is another thing that I really spent time looking at in that show. And he's probably has the most textural paintings of all the abstract expressionists. He was adding sand and other sort of materials into the oil paint to give it a lot of, you know, like heavy structure. To me, there's something... I can't describe, but there's a visceral response to something that has that magnitude of materiality, especially if it's something that's supposed to be a flat thing on the wall and it's that textured. And maybe it is just kind of a sentimentality for my lack of connection to the material earth, and that, you know, painting is a way of sort of channeling that desire to have some like tactile, you know, experience in the world, which is becoming so digital, and that could be part of what it is.
Remember when Marcel Duchamp abandoned painting? He said, it's an olfactory practice. You know, because painters can be seen as kind of throwbacks. Mm. You know, yeah.
Yeah, well, it's, I mean, that tradition of putting paint substance on canvas is, I mean, it's rooted in that French academic tradition, and then it kept getting sort of like all these avant-garde movements keep trying to reinvent it and say, oh, now we're doing something completely revolutionary, but it still has stayed within that format, you know, and it's like it sort of is this antiquated craft practice now that and I mean, I think that can be fine, you know, you can it can be its own isolated way of like channeling your creativity or channeling your ideas, and it has a huge history of people doing it and within these sort of constraints. So it has its own language, it has its own sort of, you know, narratives and heroes and villains, you know, within it. And so I think it's still like a really viable way for people to operate creatively because of all that, and because people can still have a genuinely profound experience with it, because in a way, like, almost so many people are conditioned to have an experience through painting because they've had art history, you know, explained to them through the history of painting a lot of times.
Hopefully. I mean, I'm not sure. I think that's a shrinking number of people. I really do wish. I think people would love paintings more if they knew about the lives of the painters and what painters were trying to do over time. You know, the connection between social history and imagery. Mm-hmm. I think that's what really makes people be drawn to it at first.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And want to understand what's behind what it ends up looking like. And I guess what that comes down to is like, making, what is that art saying, and is it communicating to people who are looking at it today? If ever there was a time when people wanted to communicate something, you know, foreign about their society, I find that a lot more people are wanting to do it today than they did even last year. Hmm. Do you feel that at all, and do you think your painting practice will be capable of expressing something like that?
I think, well, every generation, every society or any culture is always, it's, I don't know how to explain it. It's happening at that moment for a reason. And then, but maybe 10, 20 years later, you look back at it, and then I think you can trace history through that art piece, painting, or whatever. So maybe unintentionally, it's marking this present moment in time. And it's more so when you look back at it, that's when you realize if it was relevant or not. But I think it'll always be. So
That question's something that I've been actually struggling with pretty deeply this year because of the election results of, you know, 2016 here in the U.S. And my art practice has sort of divided between the work that I was doing as a painter and then more activist work, which has kind of expressed itself in other forms of like tactile creation and also like performance and you know, they're kind of organizational, like curatorial things. And I've been struggling to bring those things together because it takes a lot of energy to maintain these two separate lives, these two separate art practices, and they do feel really distinct and separate to me right now. And then the abstract expressionist show brings up it brings it up for me in that this, because an abstract painting usually doesn't reference anything outside itself, it lends itself to be co-opted by whatever narratives are convenient or useful to whatever power, you know, or whoever has the power. So with like the abstract expressionists, you know, at this time you had, at the time that they were working, you sort of had their paintings used as a promotional tool or propaganda for capitalism versus like the realist painting that was happening in the Soviet Union. It's like, oh, these are individuals. They're doing what they want. You know, they're expressing their individuality and their like subconscious and all this sort of stuff.
And so, they're big, brawny American guys.
Yeah. Yeah. So it becomes politicized, you know, even because of its lack of content, because it's not saying anything specific, then you can say whatever you want about it, especially if the painters aren't talking too much about it. And so as someone that's been making, you know, abstract work, things that don't reference any sort of narrative, that it's something that that I've just been struggling with and trying to figure out if there's a way to keep working in the way that I've been working with painting. and not feel like I'm just kind of like tapping out of these really horrible things that are going on in politics.
Do those concerns ever occur to you, Kainon?
Well, they do, and like I'm like always listening to the radio, and so I'm like hearing all the news and stuff, and so it's always like going into me. And I think when I'm like making paintings, I try to not let that consciously affect what I'm doing, but like I guess that rejection of trying to deal with like politics and that kind of comes out like in the reverse of like everything sarcastic. And so, and like also like I wouldn't want to like overtly like intentionally make something that kind of speaks too politically about any issue unless I like really knew that what I was making was like if I like really had it, like if like I wouldn't want to do it sort of like halfway or like not like the message isn't really coming out in a way. So something that I have to like think about if I want to deal with it.
Do you ever put text into your paintings?
Have I
mean, you have.
Yeah.
But I mean,
Well, for the most part, the text usually acts as, like, sometimes it kind of acts as a mark, or, like, in, like, one of them, it was a painting that I did of a drawing that I made when I was a kid, and so...
Killer whale.
Yeah, of the orca, and then, so in that drawing that I made as a kid, there was some text, so I included that for that reason, but I don't try to, I try not to add, like, a banner in a painting.
Oh, really? You're not going to say, like, obey or resist or anything like that? Huh. Why?
Well, I guess, like, what I would want is for, like, the image to speak for itself in a way and not have, like... Well, but I guess I kind of do that with the titles as well, but I just don't know how much I like paintings that have, like, big letters and... They're, like, telling you something with words.
Big didactic statements, you mean?
Yeah.
How do you work with meaning and what you might want to say, Andrew?
I don't know. I guess for me, I'm not very good at, like, talking and all that kind of stuff. So I guess I kind of see my paintings as, like, a way to sort of, like, get out like what's in my head and all that, like a lot of times I think you know, sometimes I ruin the painting just by like talking about it to other people and like, but I don't know, you know, I think I mean, me personally, I'm just talking for myself, but you know, whether or not like the message like you know, reaches like the masses or becomes like universalized or you know, just like you know, that kind of thing, I don't think it's really up for me to decide. Like, I guess for myself, I try to aim just to, you know, just be as honest as I can on, like, on the, during the painting process. And there is, like, you know, subject matter, just, like, there's usually, like a, some kind of, like, deeper meaning behind, like, each individual piece, but... Yeah, I don't know. I guess I try not to, like, force it too much either. Mm-hmm. With, like, the painting, I think it's important to sort of, like, talk to, like, communicate to other painters as well. Just because, you know, it's, like, I mean, I'll just be, like, kind of, like, forthright. Like, I think, like, painting is, like, it is relevant. I think it's, you know, it has its place and, it's always going to have its place, like, in the sort of, like, upper echelons of, like, you know, what we call fine arts and all that. And, you know, like, a lot of times, like, you know, it's kind of hard to articulate why, but, you know, I think people are always going to be drawn to, like, making marks on whatever surface, you know, it's just, like, part of who we are. And, you know, there's definitely, like, a technique to it, you know, I mean, you know, as natural as a process it is, like, you know, I'm still somebody who, like, places, like, a lot of, like, importance on, like, skill and technique. So I think in a lot of ways, like, it's like a responsibility for painters to sort of, like, communicate to other painters, to sort of, like, you know, just to expand, like, the lexicon, like, the vocabulary of, you know, what we call painting, you know? And
that's like being in conversation with all the painters before you, all the people who
painted. Yeah, you know, and it's more than like just like technique as well. Like like this abstract expressionist show, for example. Like you know, in Hawaii, like I mean, my friends, like my non-art friends, my family, they could care less about it. And you know, that's how I grew up as well. So I think for this show, like I don't know if it was intentional or they just couldn't like afford to get so many like big name artists like into the show. But there was, like, a lot of, like, artists in there with, like, you know, Asian American artists with, like, roots to Hawaii. And I think, you know, that's important. It shows, like, local artists, like, you know, this is, like, the path that they took. A lot of these guys, they're influenced by, like, these the abstract expressionists on, like, in New York and wherever. And, you know, this is, like, they traveled, they migrated, they did a pilgrimage to New York and all that. And it's important to, like, show, like, the local artists nowadays, you know, that, you know, this is what they did and, you know, you can do the same thing. And it's, you know, it's like an ongoing thing, like, you know, from generation to generation. I don't know. That sort of got off like on a tangent.
No,
there,
but I think you're right. That is what why they did that show, actually, you know.
I wasn't aware.
It honestly was to, I guess, show that they're, that people were painting here at the same time the abstract expressionists were painting.
A lot of those,
I don't know if you can go with much further than saying that, but
yeah, a lot of the paintings that I liked in that show, they were actually by
local guys.
Artists. Yeah, like there was that one. I mean, it was like kind of like quasi abstract. It was like a landscape of, I don't know where it was. It looked like mountains and like
the
ocean and
all that.
Is it like Kwai or something?
Could have been, yeah.
Yeah, or something like that.
I think
it was
the Ruben Tam one with the Green Mountains, right?
Yeah. I thought that one was like real cool, and then it's like all the elements of the painting are sort of like talking with each other and all that. So was like a lot. I think a lot of the strong work in that show was done by like those artists with like Hawaii roots. To kind of go back to what we were saying,
what comes to mind, guys? What are you saying to yourself when you're while you're painting? Are you saying like Matisse saying, Luke's calm volupté. I'm here to create something that people can look at and like an easy chair. They can sink into it.
Yeah, I feel like my connection to the viewer or the potential viewer has changed over the years. I think I was a lot more interested in other people's experience or their reaction or their interpretation of what I was doing earlier in my life. And as the longer that I've been doing this, the more it's become about getting closer towards just engaging in something that feels like a meaningful use of my time. And a lot of that meaning or that feeling of this is something useful that I'm doing is, I think comes from just losing myself in the experience of making the thing and just curiosity and about what the materials might do to each other or how changing up something that I've done before in some way might result in something surprising to me. So I think I've sort of retreated away from an interest in pleasing or narrating or communicating specific things through the paint, and it's become more about like moving closer in towards this space where I just find enjoyment in the act of doing the thing and in satisfying my own curiosity about different ways of different variations on what I've done before.
Does this mean you're giving up on making a living this way?
Yeah, in a way, yeah. I I don't know. And I think also over the years, I've become less and less interested in turning myself into a brand, you know, and I think everyone gets transformed in some way into an operative within the, you know, the capitalist system that we exist in. And for me, the pressure or the idea that my artwork needs to have some sort of market value and market and consistency with a brand and some sort of, you know, commercial appeal was moving me further and further away from the experience that I had originally getting me into art, which was just like a pure like exploration of my thoughts and feelings and ideas. And I've really found that having to think about the packaging of a thing and having to think about the system of marketing and distribution and buying and, you know, purchasing artwork as a way of sustaining a living, which is hard to do even if you are able to you know, make the necessary adjustments to yourself to make that happen. I found that to be just sort of just collapsing the whole point of getting into it in the first place. So, you know, I'd be very happy making sustaining myself through a combination of teaching and, you know, grants that are granted to artists for doing specific projects or for, you know, for other reasons of just like sustaining your practice. But the commercial route of, you know, galleries and collectors and all those things, I'm not opposed to doing shows as a way of, you know, of like getting people to, you know, joining into the community of talking about the work. And I think that connection to people and, you know, getting people to engage with what you're doing is part of the point too. But the whole system of transforming yourself into a brand and sort of this conveyor belt of production is like pretty dissatisfying to me.
Kainoa, well, the three of you have all had shows recently, good ones. Kainoa, you know, your experience from your show. I mean, great work. How do you feel about its saleability? Are you going to adjust yourself here? Or do you need to?
Well, I guess when I'm making something, I try, also like Jan, I try not to think about that. And a lot of times I'll have ideas and my girlfriend Amber will say, like, that's a horrible idea. No one's going to want that. And, like, I think that it's, like, I like that part of, like, making something that's, like, so ridiculous that, like, nobody could ever have that. But it, when somebody sees it, they like get a laugh out of it or something. And so a lot of times, like what my main focus is just making something that like makes somebody else, like whether they like it or not, makes them like feel something or like have some kind of reaction to it. So usually when I'm working, I'm mostly just trying to make myself laugh while I make something. So
trying to surprise yourself.
Yeah.
Huh?
Mm-hmm. And a lot of it comes from, like, to me, they seem like more subtle jokes because they're, like, taking things in art history and, like, other painters in art history and taking what they've done and spinning it around or...
That's why, for your work especially, I feel people need to bring something to it. They need to bring a little knowledge of art history.
Mm-hmm.
And how depiction's been done.
Yeah. But I think, like a lot of my friends that came to my show that they're not artists and they don't, study art, they all, got a kick out of it too. And like, they kind of, most of them could like kind of see what I was trying to do, in different paintings and stuff. So I don't know.
What did they think you were trying to do?
Well, like they would tell me something about it and I was like, yeah, like that's what I was kind of aiming for. Or there were so many paintings in the show and they're all different, so like I wasn't trying to do like one thing, but like in each specific work, most of them kind of got it. But a lot of them also, like, it's interesting when you look at something for so long that like you only have one way of looking at it, and so like when somebody else comes in and gives you a different input, you kind of like see it in a different way, and like sometimes it's annoying when they like, that looks like a dog or a shark or something.
You can't not see it. Well, Alina, you just have closed up a really nice show at Ars Cafe too.
Thank you.
Did you feel how did you feel about your work in that show, and how did you feel about it after?
I was pretty satisfied with it. I was happy, and as a whole, I was really happy too. I guess I wasn't trying to do any specific theme with my own work. They weren't the same stories. They all had their own individual narratives to it. And
do you think you could do what you're doing, you know, graphically in a computer, digitally?
Oh, my God, no. It's so hard. You mean like
I mean, if you
Photoshop?
Had fully mastered Photoshop.
Yes and no. Maybe visually it'll look the same, but it'll never have that quality to it. I guess that surface materiality to it. Kind of what we were talking about earlier with graphic and non-graphic works. Even if it looks, or, you know, when we look at books with paintings in it and you look at it in person, it's so different. So it could never, you know, mimic something that's on a screen versus something in real life.
Well, guys, you know, is there a painting movement going on here? Is this a time when we're going to look at the art going on, being made right now in Hawaii? Think about the recent shows we've had here in town. Are we going to look back at this period and say that there was something going on? And if so, what?
I've noticed I've only been here by maybe 3 years and some change, but having been a graduate student at UH Manoa and seeing a lot of these younger painters working and starting to do shows, I've noticed something that I guess I hadn't been seeing where I was living before, with which is a real interest and fascination with representation. And I think all, you know, three of the painters that I'm you know, looking at here, engage with representation in some, in a different way. And whether it's translating like you know, ideas or stories or feelings about this place, or, you know, just a more kind of critical, playful engagement with representation itself. I've noticed that as a trend. I don't know if you would call it a movement, but it's something that I've definitely observed in my time here.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because I'm not sure if it, I feel it's a national thing and kind of springs out. But here, maybe it could be related to our affection for manga. Is it a way that street artists, you know, it's that combination of gestural and representational that really we see all over Kakaako.
I grew up in Japan, so I'm used to a lot of visual narratives. And I wouldn't say that I'm trying to make manga or anime at all. But for me, I do like not 100% representational, but something to grasp to that tells a story. Street art, I maybe more like gestural and color-wise, but I don't really gear towards that all the time. But there's nice, more abstraction that happens with street art, I think, versus representational. So maybe unintentional marks that people would do, I think, are interesting in street art, if that makes sense.
Well, if there is sort of an affection for representation here, what do you think that might be linked to?
I wonder, I mean, the representation can be a more direct way of communicating with people that don't have as much background in art history. You know, I think it takes much more background to be able to walk into that ABEX show and really have a profound experience in there, or feel like it's communicating something specific to you. Whereas walking into a gallery that has representational narratives, figures, you know, references to real things, there's more of an immediacy to being able to unpack what that is trying to communicate, even if it's ambiguous, you know. And so I wonder if it's a move away from the sort of inherent elitism of something that doesn't address things that people can immediately understand, you know, which I think, you know, conceptual art and abstraction is guilty of, even though, you know, abstraction's become a lot more acceptable. We have it in hotels and restaurants, and it's a form of representation in its own way, because you see it and you recognize it as a painting, you know, and so it's sort of been de-radicalized in that way. So maybe it's a little bit of both of those things, where it's becoming radical again to say things through figuration, because abstraction has become sort of mundane, and it's also something that's more immediately. It opens more of an immediate response to people that haven't like been pouring through art history books.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I see that really working for you, Kainoa. You know, because of the different ways that you do representation, mm-hmm. and all of them are kind of pull you in, but you don't expect to see all of them in one painting.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Yeah. That's the thing.
I think that comes from when I'm working, I'm really impatient, so I'm like working on one way of working, and then I get bored with it, and so I switch to another pretty quickly. And so like I'm always like sporadically changing what I'm doing.
But that's almost like switching languages, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it makes it almost like a polyglot thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is kind of exciting. It's like flipping channels.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
I was real interested in the painting you did in the last show at the Left Hand, Right Hand.
Mm-hmm.
He painted a house, one side with his left hand, the other side with his right hand. But I saw that as sort of like an opening to like a new way of within the same sort of system, mm-hmm. of thinking about how things are represented. It was very directly tied to like the circuitry of your brain to your arms,
yeah.
And so I think that it's a conceptual way of doing representational paintings. It's making you think about how your brain like actually works, and how your body works,
yeah.
and how our it goes from brain to arm to painting. And so I think there's a lot of room to play and mess around with representation, because our entire reality is a representation to us. And
yeah.
I think there's endless conversations and profound experiences to be had when you're starting to open up that really ambiguous space of how we produce reality.
Mm-hmm.
There's almost no way you cannot reveal yourself when you're interacting with something that way, huh? Okay, now let's just send out just a couple of ideas for people who, if they want to get turned on to painting or find out more about it, is there anything you could recommend?
There's Painter's Painting. It's it came out in the 70s, and it's on YouTube, I think, and it follows the abstract expressionists and the second generation dudes, Rauschenberg and all that, and then through the pop art with Andy Warhol, but it's like super good. The crew goes to like each of the artist studios, and like they're in there talking about their work and stuff.
Well, I mean, specifically for the ABEX show, I showed my students the movie Pollock, which is I think it's Ed Harris's Pollock.
Mm-hmm.
Val Kilmer plays de Kooning. It's pretty good. I mean, it definitely it's interesting, especially the dynamic between a male artist and his wife, who is a great painter in her own right, but really
Lee Krasner,
who's stepped aside to really kind of cultivate and prop up his career. The movie really lays out that whole thing in an interesting way, and then you get a little bit of the backstory too of how they hung out in New York, taverns, and got real drunk, and and, you know, yelled about Picasso and painting. So I don't know. It's kind of a fun just sort of narration of that time period for what it is.
And, you know, it's fun to think about those very guys, Satoru Abe, Bunpei Akagi, all those guys, Tadashi Sato, who in Honolulu had something like the Cedar Bar at Kuhio Grill on King Street. They had studios in Makali and were trying to, scratch around and keep it going. They went intermittently to New York, came back, and this was in the 50s. And, Satoru was telling me about how they used to paint into the night, maybe around 9 o'clock. They'd get together at at Kuhio Grill and just order a beer. And poo-poos at that time were just the leftovers from the night before. They'd serve them out and it'd be free, and they'd just spend the night there talking. And how and why those people were inspired by painting in the 1950s, 40s, how they went from Hawaii to New York City, knowing that that was where painters were, and how they ever preserved their knowledge of the islands and came up with a kind of coherent, their body of work's kind of coherent when you look at it in that room with all the abstract expressionist stuff. Mm-hmm. Mm. You just wonder if anything like that is currently actually happening.
Well, what you just mentioned, that story, that's a story that I'd really like to hear more about and see and hear, like, articulated in the same way that I've been fed the story of the New York painters, you know, the mainland painters that became so famous. I feel like that could be a really nice element to that exhibition, of making that story more clear and sort of really painting the picture of the people and what inspired them and how they got connected to that whole thing. Because as it is right now, walking in there and walking through that gallery, they do feel more like a supporting cast to the main actors. And especially since the show is located here, I'd really like to see that narrative, you know, be put more out there, and maybe that would have the potential to, you know, inspire, you know, people to, you know, like, you know, band together and form like a strong, like, coherent movement, or start thinking of themselves in that way as like a united, you know, community with a specific aesthetic, or at least like some relationships and their ideas and what they're trying to do.
Exactly. How is the art that we make here different from other places? Or is it? You know how globalization is. You know how the art that is lifted up as international fine art from China looks exactly like international fine art from anywhere, just about. That's not what I'm looking for. What I'm looking for is what comes from here and looks like it comes from here. So let's all keep our eyes open, and you guys tell me when you see that.
Yeah. No. We'll find out. 10 years later, looking back.
We'll find out what we were doing.
Yeah. That's some time to reflect. Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you so much, all
thank
of you.
You.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks.
Thank you.